Richard Ben Kramer, you're my favorite reporter in the world, you know, but you're also my authority in my book, or in your book, rather, on the matter of what it takes. What makes the personal margin of victory in these grueling presidential brawls? In your study of George Bush Sr., 1988, George H.W. Bush, what it took was a thrust for Bob Dole's jugular in the New Hampshire primary after a big Bush defeat in Iowa. George Bush made a decision to go with that Senator Straddle television ad that killed Bob Dole, and it ended forever the Bush image of a kind of clean fingernail gentility. The question today is what is the what it takes piece for the Sun in the White House, George W. Bush, in the close of this 2004 campaign? What does it take?
Well, in this case, Chris, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. George W. will do what it takes as well. Senator Straddle is an ad that may show up about Kerry. That's exactly what...
Isn't that interesting?
I would not be surprised to see them researching his finances, researching his marital history. You know, they're going to take him to the cleaners if they possibly can.
Hmm.
You know, the family, it's not just these exemplars who happen to end up in the White House. The family is ferocious from start to finish, starting with the grandfather, Pop Walker, George Herbert Walker. He's the H.W. in the first George Bush's name, and he's the W. in George Bush's name.
He was a buccaneer, too, in his way?
Oh, he was as hard a chunk of iron as ever came out of the Midwest.
Hmm. Interesting you say Midwest, too. I mean, we think of them as New England, but, of course, those are Ohio roots.
That's right.
What does that tell you?
Well, they were a family of strivers. The whole image that the Washington Press Corps came down with about the Bushes of New England gentility really didn't quite fit. As a matter of fact, the joke in the family was about those genteel New Englanders.
Hmm.
All the ethic of the family was, we're not like that.
Hmm. In the 88 campaign, Richard, in your book, What It Takes, W. was known as Junior, and he was a kind of reckless guy who always wanted Lee Atwater in the action. Lee Atwater is dead. Who fills that bill?
Well, I guess Karl Rove is the one who would fill it now. You know, Rove is a little bit different character than Atwater. He doesn't have the same glee for taking somebody down, but he's just as heady and just as determined.
In the case of W., are you talking about toughness? Are you talking about consistency and clarity, which a lot of people like, or are you talking about a certain no-holds-barred ruthlessness?
Well, more or less all of the above. W. is a wonderful guy to sit with. He's a good friend and a good talker and great company. But he's very decided. He is not working out his positions or his plans. He is executing them. He's a man of continuous execution.
Hmm.
And it gives him a certain toughness, and it makes him very difficult to deal with as an opponent, because he will order his world and the effort of his campaign to exactly what the plan is. You know, he doesn't cavil to put it into execution.
Take the Swift Boat Veterans ad against John Kerry as an example. Is that the mark of what you're talking about? John Cain asked the White House to disavow it. They haven't quite. Are we going to see more of this?
Yeah, I think we will see more of it. You know, Chris, it seems to me that the problem with this campaign, what makes me hungry in this, or keeps me hungry in this campaign, is that neither Bush nor Kerry has presented a couple of large proposals or ideas that are the positive side of the equation.
Mm.
They're busy taking each other down, and I recognize the necessity to do that, but it seems to me there's two halves of this mud pie. You have to put it together with something that I know I'm going to get if I vote for Bush, or I know I'm going to get if I vote for Kerry. And in Bush's case, it's probably less needful, because we've had 3 years now to take a look at him. But in Kerry's case, only does it have to be a proposal that people can say in a sentence or two, but it has to be an idea that seems to come from his own life. You know, campaign is a story, and at least in my book. And the proposals that a man makes or the policies that he follows have to seem to come out of the biography that we gradually come to know. That's why it all starts to make sense to the voter, and why the person can go into that booth and pull the lever for that guy with a happy heart.
But Richard, what are you suggesting to John Kerry, Richard?
I'm suggesting that he use the wartime biography that he started.
But God, hasn't he used it enough?
Excuse me?
Hasn't he used it enough?
Well, what I'm suggesting he use it for is to come up with a policy idea, ideas for the government that seem to flow out of that story. It's not enough, as Bob Dole proved, to have a wonderful wartime story. It's only enough if the politics that you profess thereafter seem to come from that story.
Well, let's apply the what it takes question to John Kerry. He's a man of mettle, obviously, and he's been a very tough finisher in all of his political races in Massachusetts. He loves that final adrenal surge with the firemen and the veterans, you know, charging all around him. Is this what it takes?
Well, it'll certainly help him. And, you know, God knows the campaign is a long and grueling ordeal, and a guy who's got a finishing kick can sometimes bring it over the top, but not if he's not close. You know, it seems to me with the run of bad news that George Bush has been suffering, that John Kerry should be, 20 points ahead if he had something we were voting for him for. That's why I say he's got to come up with a couple of large ideas that can be simply said that people know they're going to get from him.
His largest idea seems to be, haven't you had enough of George Bush?
Well, exactly. And that is an idea in this campaign, but not enough of an idea. You know, let me give you some examples from history, Chris. When Clinton ran, he ran on three things. It was a middle-class tax cut, health insurance for everybody, and change, the overarching idea of change. Now, in Clinton's case, none of those happened to come true. The middle-class tax cut, he decided against. His health care proposal went down in flames, and the only thing he seemed to change was his mind. But the campaign was successful because those big ideas, each of which could be said in a word or two, carried the message of who Bill Clinton was. And I think your political ideas are the necessary ingredient in biography. You know, George Bush has really made a biography for himself in his presidency.
Explain.
Just as Ronald Reagan kind of showed us who he was in the air traffic controller strike.
Right.
George Bush showed us who he was after 9/11. He had that kind of decisive, no looking back, charge forward, according to his ideas. And it has played out in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq in a way that people either love or hate. You know, one thing that you cannot say about Bush is that we don't know who he is or how he is. He has shown us, sometimes against all evidence, that he is going to charge the line and make himself a hole to run through. So I think he's got less of a problem about biography.
Hmm.
I think Kerry has to show us something that's about his own character. Doesn't have to be the same kind of charge ahead and damn the torpedoes. It could be a much more supple or cautious way of conducting himself. But as he does it, we will learn who he is.
Richard Ben Kramer, your new book on Israel and the Palestinians revisits a region where you won the Pulitzer Prize for reporting a couple of decades ago. And if anything, the war looks more endless and tragic and ugly than it ever did. But also, I mean, the interesting element for me now is that our own war in Iraq begins to show a lot of depressing resemblances to that eternal struggle around Jerusalem. Can we connect some of the dots here? I mean, it is one world and one moment, but between the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the Iraq War, and this Bush-Kerry fight?
I think there are a lot of dots there to be connected, Chris. You know, I went to do the book about Israel and the Palestinians because I started seeing news stories from Israel and the territories that I just couldn't reconcile with the country I thought I knew.
Hmm.
And I went back to find out what had happened to Israel. And to make a long story short, what had happened was that the occupation of the Arab lands won in the 67 war, an occupation that had gone on for 37 years, has subsumed the whole rest of the country. Israel itself is, its mission is the occupation, its preoccupation is the occupation.
Mm.
And the whole society is organized around it. I mean, you don't, if you're a hawk and I'm a dove, we don't even listen to each other. We don't talk to each other. We don't hear anything that the other side says, because who you are is dependent on where you stand in the conflict. And I think that's what's happened in our politics as well.
Well, explain that. I mean, there is a strange entanglement now between George Bush and Ariel Sharon, but also between the stances with respect to militant Muslim Arab world. I mean, it makes one very uneasy, but...
Well, let me tell you a little about W. He's a guy who gets his information face-to-face. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to read the 40-page report about class size in Swedish elementary schools. He wants you to read the report about class size in Swedish elementary schools and give him a good hard 30 seconds about it. He listens to the people he can sit down with. He listens to the people he likes. And the only guy in the entire Middle East conflict that he does like and does listen to is Sharon.
Hmm.
They sit down like a couple of old ranchers together. Sharon happens to be the proprietor of the largest farm in Israel.
Hmm.
And Bush has a sizable tract in Texas, as you know. So they talk, you know, they talk about the rain, they talk about calving, they talk about Arafat, they talk about, you know, the Longhorn versus the Holstein, you know. And they get along famously, and that's how Bush gets information.
Let me ask you, where, Richard, did the U.S. commitment to Israel fit among either the real reasons for the war in Iraq or the professed reasons for the war in Iraq?
Well, I don't hold with the people who say that George Bush was doing Israel's bidding when he went into Iraq. You know, there's a kind of common wisdom of the cognoscenti who want to say, you know, well, Wolfowitz is really, you know, carrying water for Israel, or Pearl or Ledeen or any one of these neocon fellas who happen to be Jewish. I don't hold with it. I think the way I look at Bush, George W. Bush, is more like the scene from The Godfather where Pacino says, "Today I take care of all the family business," you know, and everybody gets hit at once. I think he was going into Iraq from the time he walked into the White House, and as several books have pointed out, his first questions after 9/11 were, "Can't we find something that has to do with Iraq in this?" So I think he was going in all the neocon worldview that has been supplied around it came after the fact. And I think that our occupation in Iraq has shown us that American troops, American boys and girls, will do things that we never thought we would see them do. Just as I found in Israel, the occupation has its own momentum and its own ethic, and it's an ethic that inevitably corrupts the society of the occupiers as well as the occupied.
Hmm. Richard Ben Kramer, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is one place in the world where almost everybody agrees that a strong American hand is required for resolution. Who would be your candidate now to provide it?
Well, neither one of them has distinguished himself for clarity or toughness.
Bush or Kerry, you mean?
That's right. In their remarks on the situation, they seem to be in a contest as to who can woo the established Jewish organizations with more bloodthirsty rhetoric about Arafat. But I think Kerry has at least a chance to see some reason in the situation. Bush, as I say, gets his information man-to-man, and the man he can listen to in this is Sharon. So his view of the situation is more or less Sharon's view, which is a view that goes back in this conflict to 1948, when Sharon started fighting the Palestinian people.
Can you imagine where John Kerry would begin?
I think that bitter experience will have to teach him that he cannot equate being a friend of Israel with being a friend of Sharon. The current politics of Israel is so twisted. The country itself is unable to act in its own interest. And so if you are trying to put the U.S. on a policy of agreeing with Israeli policy, it's a dead end both for the U.S. and for Israel. I think that the president who's going to get something done is probably going to be regarded, at least at first, as some kind of terrible anti-Semite or terrible enemy of the Jewish people and of Israel. He's going to have to take a lot of heat.
Man, you're making a very large assignment there.
Well, it's a large assignment, but, you know, somebody is going to do it. Chris, there's only one way this story in Palestine can come out. There are two people. There are going to be two countries. And the U.S. is going to have to get on the proper side of history there. It's not going to work otherwise. It never will finish otherwise. And that's not good for them. That's not good for us. And that's not good for the world as a whole.
Richard, you're a brave man and a wonderful writer. I'm so grateful that you could join us.
Well, you're very kind to say all of the above, Chris.
I mean every word of it.
Thank you,
Richard.
My pleasure.
We'll talk soon.